This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and this outfit is country, and I love country in it. And this isn't a square dance because she's dancing circles around me, Leia Green.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You have pitched to me today, Say the Last Dance.
Yes.
And I just love when people, like, to borrow a very dated phrase, understand the assignment.
Thank you. I really feel I have.
Because I have had so many people in my DMs pitching 10 Things I Hate About You, which is obviously the other Julia Stiles classic, mm-hmm. and the thing that kind of got her this role. But my response has always been, everyone loves that movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing garbagey about it. Everybody loves it. Heath Ledger is adorable. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is adorable. You've misunderstood. Goodbye.
Yeah. No conversation really needed.
Yeah, like no one, there's only anyone else talking about how good that movie is.
Yeah.
But there is a real, this movie, Save the Last Dance, was an enormous success. Mm-hmm. It was like instantly in the rotation of sleepover movies.
Yeah.
And yet there is a real lack of discussion around it, and there's a real taint around it of it being shite.
Yes. I was like, I love this film. I've seen it probably, I don't know, 40 times maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never like read up on it because I've got my own private thoughts and feelings, but I've never done a podcast about it. But when we were going to do this, I went to the internet to uncover what I assumed would be the hundreds of essays.
And oral histories and all the things you normally find when a beloved 20-year-old film has been around, you know?
And there was just literally nothing. And I was like, am I the only person? Is it me? Am I the person that got this film? And I thought you probably also would, so here we are.
Correct. Because my experience of this movie was, I remember, I have such a clear memory of it, because I was off sick school for like 2 weeks when I was 12, because I had bronchitis, and I watched this with my mum in her bed. Aww. You know when you get to be in your mum's bed and you're sick. And I remember loving it and being so into the romance and so into the dance. And then my mum just saying, her legs are too thick to be a dancer.
Oh, mother.
What was your first experience with it?
You know something? I thought you'd ask me that, and I cannot remember the first time I watched it. And I genuinely can't remember, like, having never seen it. Like, it's such a part of my life now, my kind of, like, film world. I would have been 12. We're, like, the same age.
Yeah.
And I know that when I first watched it, I probably watched it, like, 4 times within a week.
Wow.
And then I think,
like, was this very much a DVD or a VHS that you had in your house that was just there?
Yeah, it would have been a video. It have been recorded off the TV, can it? Did you ever have those films where there are adverts in between?
Yes, and the adverts just stay in your mind on a rotor.
I don't think it was that. I think it might have been like, could you buy things from Blockbuster? Or did you only rent them? Could you buy things there?
Yeah, or you could just keep things.
Maybe I stole it from Blockbuster.
Yeah.
I would just sit. For some reason, I would sit on the floor rather than on the sofa when I watched this film. Like,
you could be right very close.
The TV, yeah. And I just, so when I was 12, so I did ballet from like the age of 5 to 18, like, you know, really seriously, like 5 times a week vibe. So I was obsessed with ballet, but I also loved like hip hop. And I grew up in Sheffield.
Mm.
Most of my friends are white.
Yeah.
But I would spend most of my time, if I wasn't practicing ballet, I would be like making up dance routines to like Ja Rule kind of thing. And like, I think there's something, obviously the parallels aren't perfect, but like there must be something specific. I think for me in that moment, I was like, oh, this film was made for me.
Yeah.
Like, I also love ballet and hip hop. Like, I'm the only person in the world, but it was just, I just loved it. I loved everybody in it. I loved everything about it. Yeah, and
That's the thing, when you say Sheffield, you know, and I'm assuming kind of the early noughties, like that's what everyone going to associate with Sheffield in the early noughties, like the Arctic Monkeys. It's like indie scene. It's like a whole different kind of flavour. So I can imagine what kind of influences you were being steeped in that environment, which I realise is a very limited view of what Sheffield has to offer.
They're all dat minds listening to Arctic Monkeys. And I were in my room with Ja Rule. But kind of, yeah.
That's the first time the accent has emerged all day. I love it. But this is also like, this was the real era of 1,000 music channels.
Yes.
Yes. And that thing where you come home from school, have your depressing little after-school snack. Oh. Mine would be a turkey bacon sandwich.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
It was really good. They like had the kind of consistency of like an insole, but I loved it. Mm. And just going through all the music channels, yeah, and just seeing those iconic videos. The one I think about all the time is Maya's What You Gonna Do, when it's like in the desert with the sticks and they're doing that very sort of jaggedy, jaunty, sort of popping out your elbow and all that kind of stuff. And though it feels like those music videos were very much created for the preteen girl audience who would then copy them in school. So they were like complicated, but they were also in their own way simple. Uh-huh. Like anyone could kind of learn them if you had an eagle enough eye. Uh-huh. And it feels like Save the Last Dance was for that audience too, totally, right? Yeah. And it's that thing of like, and I think the people who don't like this movie tend to not like it because they love dance movies and they're like, the dancing isn't good enough, the ballet isn't good enough.
But like, I just, if you put it next to the other dance movies, it's just, it's so much better, but it's also, it's not a classic dance movie, but it's because it's got more in it, not because it's got less in it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I don't know, I watched Step Up once, like quite recently. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's taking the kind of same plot, mm-hmm, which is like, guy from the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
Meets girl who is like, from
sheltered.
Good, yeah, sheltered. He brings a bit of his like spicy vibe to her dance, they fall in love, blah blah blah, but it's just deleted all black people.
Yeah, because he's Channing Tatum.
Yeah. It's like Save the Last Dance, take out any interesting nuance and also delete black people, and I was just like, this film is shit, and like everybody loves it. And it
wait, so is it? Is it basically about like, again, merging hip hop with classical dance, and but there's no black people in it?
Yeah, literally. Okay. It's like he is a badly behaved boy, white man, who like starts watching this girl trying to audition for her dance school. I think it's like less classical, but yeah, she's like, oh no, you're a criminal, and he's like hot or whatever.
Yeah,
and then they like dance and shag, but it's like there's nothing to it.
Well, that's the thing about Save the Last Dance is that it feels like, as a movie, it was like commissioned as like, we need to do a kind of a wrong side of the tracks classic love story, mm-hmm, about a black guy and a white girl and they merge their dancing together. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the writer and director, there was two writers. One of them is Dwayne something.
Yes.
Who did Step Up and so many other dance movies. And the other one was Cheryl... Sorry, this is
Cheryl Edwards,
yes, who's a black woman, and Thomas Carter, who's a black guy. And it's like, it feels like they were like, right, if we're going to make this movie, we're going to make it almost better than it needs to be.
Yes.
We're going to make it a true ensemble cast. Like, it's going to, yes, almost like the thing that we're marketing it to like kind of a Midwest mall teen audience, mm-hmm, is like lovely doe-eyed Julia Stiles and watch her be a fish out of water.
Yeah.
But the ensemble is so impressive. You care about everyone in that movie. Like, Kerry Washington is unbelievable in it.
She's really fucking good.
She's really good. Do you think we need to do a plot summary just to get everyone up to speed in case they haven't seen it in a while?
Can you do that?
I will. So, Sarah is an aspiring ballet dancer whose mother dies in a car accident midway through her Juilliard audition. Still grieving, Sarah is sent to live with her father Roy in Chicago and transfers to a mostly black high school where she meets Chenille, a single mother, and her brother Derek. Derek and Sarah begin dancing with each other and Sarah revives her love of dance, blending her classical training with hip-hop influences. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the main thrust of the story.
Yeah.
But within that, you've got Chenille, who like, what's so clever about that character is you introduce her and it's like, oh, it's like the one person who's being nice to you in your new school.
Yeah.
Like, and she's like really bubbly and fun and kind. And you're like, everyone wants to be friends with Chenille.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous. And then it's like, you only find out maybe about half an hour after she first appears that she's also a single mother.
Yes.
And it's so beautiful the way that's done, because it was like such an era where the teen mom was, mm-hmm, so like, it was such a panic button issue. Like of like demonizing these young mothers and making them seem like these kind of idiotic or vulnerable or insatiable or whatever.
Yeah. Or but, just very like one dimensional. Like that is what they are. They are a single mum. It's not like a teenage mom.
Yeah.
It's not like they are an interesting person who also happens to have a child, which is who Chenille is.
Yeah. And it's handled so what feels very realistically, this thing of she invites Sarah to go to steps, which
I cannot tell you. You know when you're right, the longing in my heart as a 12-year-old
to go to steps.
To steps. I just was like, that's where I need to be. I can bust out my routines in steps and the crowd will go wild. Like, I honestly, it almost makes me feel like I want to go there so
oh
much.
Oh my God.
Anyway, carry on.
But things, I do think the whole steps, it's so well done. Because like, it's really rare in movies that nightlife is depicted with any accuracy.
Yes.
Or like, it's so frequently that you see a nightclub scene depicted and it's always like, here's where the evil people hang out having sinful fun and your downfall will emerge here. But it's like the thing of like, or it's that, or it's like if you have very young people, it's that thing. I don't know if you were ever a Buffy fan.
No.
But in Buffy, they all had this nightclub called the Bronze and it was never explained the way that underage people were always there. And it was just like a way to shoehorn a musical guest every week.
Okay, yeah.
But it never felt like, it's like, what town would have this, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Steps, it feels like there's this whole thing about getting a fake ID. There's a whole explanation about how they get there.
I also really love her fake ID. It was like quite an old, quite a large white lady with brown hair, and she was like, she looks nothing like me. And I love the fact that it would have worked because she was just a white person.
That's it! That's
like,
it!
It doesn't matter, hun. They're not going to look at it. They're just going to see a white person and be like, yep, probably you.
I love that because we've seen that, like, cliche done from the other side before, but to have, like, the white girl being like, no one cares what you look like. Like, literally,
you
face
all
blindness.
Look the same.
It's so brilliant.
It's clever. It's really smart.
And that whole thing of like, yeah, so where they, she goes to the apartment and it's this very natural scene of like Chenille kissing her son goodbye. And then they live with the grandmother and you can see Julia Stiles' character like putting it together a bit, being like, she looks too old to have a baby that young. And then she's like, oh, is she yours? And he's like, well, it sure ain't Mama Dean's.
Yeah.
And it's just so lovable.
Mm-hmm,
you know? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I feel like I'm talking all over your favourite film.
No, I'm, like, enjoying it so much. I'm just so happy that you love it. I'm using... I just think, yeah, that way... Like, the fake ID thing is a really good example of what this film does really well over and over again, which is, like, I think probably the least nuanced character in this film is probably Sarah.
Like, yeah.
All of the black characters who are supporting characters, really, to her... Mm. have got a lot more to them than they would do in a film where they were like the black best friend. Because normally those characters have like one thing and it's probably like they love dancing and are a bit sassy.
Yeah, and they're in all white environments.
Yeah, exactly. And in this, Sarah's personality is basically like she's white.
And traumatised.
And a bit sad, but not that sad.
Like, it was like 3 months ago this happened. So it's like, you know.
But she, yeah, like her character is kind of like, she's white and doesn't really get stuff, and that's it. And she's not a particularly interesting character on her own. What makes her interesting is all the nuanced characters around her. And I just, it tickles me slightly.
Yeah.
And there's like a character like that who is the main character and there's not that much to her. But what makes her interesting is like her friend who is really interesting and great, happens to have a child. And then her love interest who has like got so many elements to him and so many pressures on him. And you can see him working through all of that. And it's like, what feels like a really true representation of what that might be like.
Yeah.
But she's just like, hey, I can jump really high on the beam. And everyone's like, oh, fuck off. One thing I do wonder about her, the thing I don't believe in the film is like, why does anybody like her? Why does Chenille want to be her friend? Like, she's not charming. She's not fun.
She's not fun, is she?
And like, she just goes in and she's like, I've read In Cold Blood, and this is why it's good. And also, like, showing off on the beam. I'm like, babe, you're trying to make friends. Like, stop being such a...
Why is there always this... It's like Julia Stiles' second Watch Me Be Good in English Class movie. But I do actually... It's funny, because whenever you see a kind of a high school English class, it's like one of those scenes that you come back to a lot, because it's so leaden with, like... It's generally like a kind of a Shakespeare lorem ipsum that they put in there, where it's like what Shakespeare was trying to do, and then like insert the theme of the film we're watching. But it's actually that whole dialogue feels very, it's like very nuanced, and like it's a great way to introduce like a romantic lead where she says, oh, and she explains the kind of the concept of the nonfiction memoir, or the nonfiction novel. And then Derek's character immediately comes in with, you know, this was Capote taking crime and putting in white people's backyards.
Yes.
James Baldwin was doing that and nobody cared.
Yeah.
And then she goes, well, people read James Baldwin. And he's like, you don't. And it's like, it's so good.
It's really, really, really good. It's great.
Like, and it's also a great thing from the screenwriter of being like, you know, to name check writers like that mm-hmm. within the first few minutes of screen time. It's a real establishing thing of like, this might be a movie about a white person, but it's not. It's covert.
It is very covert.
Yeah.
And what you were just saying about, like going back to Chenille and the way that her child is revealed without that hysteria, I also really appreciated how unhysterical both Sarah and all of the black people were about her entering that school. Like, it could so easily have been. And I think that one of the writers, Cheryl Edwards, was saying that the original script or the original, I don't know what it was, she read the kind of treatment for it, and it was like, the white girl goes into the school and all the black people turn around and are like, what the hell? And she's like going in like terrified.
Yeah, she was like,
it was just too much. Like, realistically, it seems so realistic to me that Sarah kind of walks in and she's not terrified. She looks around and she's like, well, this is different from my other school.
Yeah.
And some of the black characters make like a small joke about her being in the Brady Bunch or whatever, but it's not this huge deal. And that allows so much more nuance to come through, and the stuff that happens about race works so much better for it, because it's kind of the, like, it's not the, oh my gosh, I've never seen a black person before that would normally happen. It is the kind of like, I now have a black love interest. What does that mean?
Yeah.
How does it affect the people around us?
And that was the thing that surprised me the most when I watched it again last night. Because again, watched it a lot as a young teenager and then sort of forgot about it until you came to me with it. And there's this like, this great arc throughout. There's no real villains in this movie apart from Trauma, right? Yeah. Like, Trauma is the only villain. But there is a kind of antagonist in this Nikki character who's Derek's ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. She's just the most, like, beautiful.
I love her.
She's iconic!
I love how she sits with, like, one hand in the air for no reason. And she's got, like, these, like, little funny, stupid pigtails. She just looks so, like, fit.
She's so fit. And she's, like, it's a proper, like, Cruella de Vil.
Like,
yeah,
like,
so vampy.
Yeah.
But when when Sarah goes, I know you, you're in my English class. Goes, that don't mean you know me. So funny. And I think I've said that before as a joke and not realized where I got it from.
Yeah.
You know? But there's this whole thing where, like, you know, that's Derek's ex and, you know, this kind of a rivalry thing going on there. And then they get into a fight in their gym class. That is, like, the way it's staged, it's very, like, it's not like, oh, poor little white butterfly being, you know, it's very, isn't it, equilibrium to it.
I like how, did you notice how ruddy-cheeked she was after that fight?
So sweaty!
it was that kind of flush that some people get at the gym that goes, like, from the side of their face to their ear.
Yeah, and crawls.
It's very stressful.
it felt like I had something that they made them do over and over again until, like, you know, it felt really real. And she really goes for her. It's not like, oh, poor me, pinned against, you know, your might. And then she's sort of explaining this to Chenille later when... Sorry, you go.
No, what I really love is the conversation they have just after that fight. You know, they've been told off. They're sitting in the gym alone.
Yeah.
And I think it's the moment where Nikki's kind of explaining a little bit, like, why the fight happened.
Yeah.
And she, like, you know, Sarah's like, oh, boo-hoo. Like, leave me alone, you just hate me because Derek likes me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Nikki's like, white girls like you are creeping up on our men. The whole world isn't enough for you. You have to creep up on ours too. And it's like, she's just told Sarah actually why she's annoyed. It's not just a simple case of like, new girl gets my man. It's that. Plus, she hates that Sarah feels so entitled to take the, like, quote, one good guy that they have.
Yeah.
And I think that Sarah is told that 3 times by 3 different characters. And she, because then, do you remember in the club, Malachi, and can we talk about Malachi in a second?
Oh my gosh.
Very scary. Very sexy.
Very sexy. Because that actor, oh God, his name is, he's a rapper as well.
Yeah.
And he does some of the songs on the soundtrack. But he was also in Moesha, and he was the bad influence boyfriend in Moesha.
Was he?
Yeah. And there was like a whole, like a two-parter, because it was a weirdly wholesome show, Moesha.
Yeah.
Where he was like caught by the dad in Moesha's bedroom, just kind of looking around.
Oh.
And Moesha was grounded for like a year.
Oh, she'd look around my bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. But go on, Malcolm.
So in Steps on, I think it might be the second time they go. Oh, yeah. It's when... It's Main Squeeze night? No, hang on.
Yeah,
it's one where they go the second time and they do like a good dance because they've been practicing. But then Derek starts dancing with Nikki and she's like, ugh. Yeah. And then she's watching and Malachi comes up to her and says, "You'll never look as good as him as she does. That's oil, your milk. Ain't no point trying to mix." So Nikki has said it to her.
Yeah.
Malachi has said it to her. And they're both not coming from a really nice place, but they're making the point that like,
yeah,
it's not gonna fucking work. And then Chenille says it to her in the like doctor's office. So they're sitting in the doctor's office. Sarah's gone with Chenille because her kid is sick or whatever, and they're in this really, really, really crowded waiting room.
Yeah,
they've been there for
and
an
it's
hour.
It's all like black children
who can't
be seen because they don't have health insurance and whatever, you know.
And it's the sound. Did you notice the sound of that? There's like so many babies screaming, and it doesn't stop when like normally, I guess a sound designer would be like, and now we like lower all the background noise so you can hear them talking.
Yeah.
But the kids just carry on screaming as they're having this really kind of tense exchange, and it really hammers home the point that Chenille's making.
And also, Sarah isn't being depicted as like the sort of the white angel who's helping her black friend. And she's just kind of sitting there like a fucking lump of potatoes, like being like, "Well, I don't know why Nikki's being so mean to me while her friend is like struggling with the diaper bag and a sick child, and she can't be seen, and the woman behind the counter isn't like being very nice to her." And she's like, "Oh my fucking god!"
Yeah. I think it's really powerful because Chenille just cracks. She's been so patient with Sarah. She's been so open. She's really tried with her. And you know, film like Nikki has said something to her. Malachi has said something to her. And Sarah's just like, "But it's nice because we like each other." And she kneels there with her kid, like, diaper off. And then she snaps. And she basically says, oh, yeah, Sarah says something like, "Oh, I don't know what, you know, what is with these people," or something. And Chenille says, "Black people, Sarah, black women. Derek's about something. He's smart. He's motivated. He's for real. He's not going to make babies and not take care of them or run the streets messing up his life. He's going to make something of, he's going to make something of himself. And here you come, white, so you've got to be right, and take one of the few decent men we have left after jail, drugs, and drive-by. That is what Nikki meant about you up in our world." And then Sarah says,
"There's only one world, Chenille."
And then she says, "That is what they teach you. We know different." And then Sarah, doesn't she say, "Open up your pretty brown eyes and look around." And then Sarah opens up her pretty brown eyes and looks like she's just noticed where she is.
Yeah. And she says, "Don't be here just to be here.
Yeah.
Open up your eyes and look around."
Yeah. And then Sarah
looks around. It's like goose pimples the way she delivers it. It's so good.
And then Sarah suddenly, I think, realizes, Sarah then probably hears properly what Nikki and Malachi have said to her already, and she hears what Chenille is saying. She looks around the doctor's office and like, "Oh, hang on, maybe there's more going on here than just like black people and white people holding hands." It's like, these people are all really fucking poor, and like a lot of aspects of their life are more difficult than mine for reasons of like structural racism, etc. And then she leaves. So she runs away.
It's uncomfortable for her.
She doesn't like it, and it's not nice.
It's that thing where it's like, Sarah is broke, but these people are poor. Do you know what I mean? Like, Sarah lives with her artiste father who is basically choosing to have a bohemian lifestyle.
Janky jazz dad, I like to
Janky Roy.
Janky Roy.
God, that is a tragic fucking dynamic. But, it's sort of, Sarah doesn't need Juilliard to get out of inner city Chicago.
No,
she can get out anytime she wants, and this can just be a blip in her life. Whereas, like, there's this real sense with all these other characters that they are sort of stuck there. And you get that, and with Malachi, who's, like, such a scary character, genuinely frightening. Like, I forgot that he slaps a girl. He, like, fucking fucks Sarah against a wall at one point.
Not fucks her against a wall.
He, like, slams her into a wall.
Yeah.
Then she tells Derek, and he's like, "I don't know." He's my friend.
Malachi, I really, like, it was a shame. I was about to say, it was a shame when he slapped that lady. Because I find him so fit. But he is really scary. And, like, not very lols.
I totally get the appeal.
Yeah.
You know? Sort of something of the night about him. Yeah.
So when he's walking through the club about to, like, fuck that guy up, he looks, like, aggressive in a kind of...
Yeah.
And he always has very large coats, and I find that quite fit for some reason.
Every time I ever see that actor in anything, he's always drowning in a coat.
So he is 5'5". So maybe that's why he likes big coats.
Little pocket boy. Little short king.
He's cute. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it feels like if they were making this movie today, and most remakes aren't any good, so I hope they don't.
Yeah.
They would have had this moment where Sarah realizes she doesn't want to join these elite all-white educational spaces, and she would say, "No, I actually don't want this.
I set up a dance school
in the
for the brown children,"
or something. Be in some way where she's sort of more involved in the community rather than just someone who's clearly passing through.
Yes,
But they weren't interested in that. It was the year 2000.
But you know, if they made it now, I think that the stuff that you miss when you're 12, and the stuff that you probably could miss now if you were, like, just kind of don't really give a shit about any of this kind of stuff, it would just be too much. I think they'd have to, somebody would tell Sarah to check her privilege.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that's it. Somebody in the doctor's office, somebody would mention healthcare specifically. I think it's done so well because it's done in a way that's real, that actually relates to people's lives. Like, I don't suspect that Chenille and Derek go around talking about, like, structural racism because they're, like, in it.
Well, this is it. This is how, like, it was a conversation we were having with another guest on the podcast, this series, of, like, people say things on Twitter, right? Mm. Of, like, we should have a all woke remake of this such a thing. And it's like, people think they want these things. And then when they actually get served to us, they're just kind of, they kind of make your skin crawl a bit. When you have characters who are not talking to each other, they're talking to the audience and they're trying to score points off an audience. And that just bumps you out of it in a way. And it's kind of hard to get back in after that.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yeah. Like,
it'd be so gross and shit and unenjoyable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there is, like, a real subtlety to this film that it doesn't get credit for, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, obviously there are incredibly melodramatic moments. Like, every time she speaks about her mother, there's, like, a swooping kind of piano underneath it. It's, like, really soap opera.
Yeah.
But then hidden within that, you have all these, like, amazing moments, you know? Mm-hmm. So as a dancer, as a former dancer,
yes.
How do we feel about Julia Stiles' dancing abilities?
I just wish she would relax those shoulders. So stiff!
So stiff! Okay,
ballet's really hard. Fine. Yeah. Like, she's not going to be amazing. But, like, it stressed me out so much rewatching it this time because it's, like, it's not that hard to put your shoulders down. And, like, that, I mean, she just is, she's not very graceful. And
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
She's not great at dancing, and, like, that's fine. The person who is her, like, double.
Yeah.
Very good. But, yeah, she just, it's the, she's a bit stiff. Which kind of, in a way, works with her character, because she's the, like, she can't loosen up white lady. But, like, she's meant to be good at ballet, so.
Well, that's the thing. It's the, like, her being this, like, you know, prodigy or whatever in the world of ballet. It's like, I don't know if you ever were. mom over pamper you, really.
If your mom hadn't died in that car crash while you were doing your audition, you wouldn't have got into Juilliard.
Here's the thing. That it's this, this, these very American movies where the prize is elite education.
Yeah.
Which I think is a real sort of trope. But I'm like, I'm worried for her. You know, she's a mentally fragile girl. I don't think she can handle Juilliard.
No.
Like, I was like, oh, so the thing at the end was like, oh, she's got in. You know, yay, we'll see you next semester, Sarah. We're very impressed. Hurrah. And she's like, hooray. And it's like, you're about to have the worst 3 years of your life. She's not going to make it through.
That film I would watch.
Well, they made Save the Last Dance too.
Yeah.
With none of the original cast.
Also, her entrance dance the second time around, the hip-hop fusion ballet.
Oh my God. Okay, so can we break it down, please? From someone who truly understands dance, I would like to hear your full review of this.
Okay, so it's like, it's her contemporary piece, which the bitchy man, who's that guy? Why is he so mean? He's like, and I assume you've prepared a contemporary piece. And she's like, yeah, because yeah, I was asked to.
That was the requirement, yeah. I mean, this guy's on a regional talent scouting tour. He probably has a kid with an earache at home, you know.
Yeah. And then so it starts and it's that song, Live Your Dreams.
Live your dreams, it's not as hard as it may seem. But I'll wait to get the cream.
And it starts. And it's really smart, this kind of parallel with the first scene, which is Sarah doing her Juilliard audition while her mum simultaneously dies in a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah is doing her second Juilliard audition while Malachi is doing a drive-by shooting and Derek is like running to her. So it's still this like simultaneous thing. What I really love, she's doing her like classical one while Malachi is doing a drive-by. She's fine. Like, she fell over the moment her mum like came off the road and Malachi is like pretty much at death's door and she's like, doesn't care about him. But then, so for her contemporary piece, she starts off, the music starts, she does an arabesque and like kind of leans down to the floor and she topples, you know, she falls and she's like, fuck. Music stops. She goes, sir, I'm sorry, I wasn't ready. And then he goes, are you ready now? And then she stands there and she's obviously freaking out. She's like, fuck, Derek's not here. We've broken up. What am I doing? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And she kind of stands there and then Derek runs in and goes, yes, sir, she's ready.
What I love, having not heard what happened
before, what I love is somebody goes, how did he get in here? And then again, quietly, somebody goes, how did he get in here? Because it's like, how the fuck? You definitely can't just run in. And they recognize that it's weird thinking about
it. Yeah.
And he kind of goes on stage and gives this pep talk and says, you know, come on. Give me some attitude. I'm watching you, baby, or whatever. And then she does it again. And it's quote-unquote good.
They certainly thought so.
But
I did too when I was 11 or whatever. Same. I was like, this is dance. And it's... What was happening? Was it because we were like... I felt like the world treated it like it was good. Also.
I think it was maybe a time where... I think we're just too, it's too cringe. And maybe like we weren't as cringed out by stuff back then. A, because of age, and B, because of like the internet not being what it is. I don't know.
Sure.
But
sure.
Like, so it's like a kind of starts with a bit of ballet, but then it's got a little hip hop spice. And there's a lot of like, at one point she actually like, kind of like,
what is that? Oh, she like fakes, she's snorting a line or something.
No, I don't think it's snorting a line. It's more like a, just like a gangster attitude. Oh, yes, like yes. Brushing my nose. I don't even know what that means.
Okay.
But it's just cringe. And there's loads of like little nods to hip hop and lots of like dust off my shoulders while doing a pirouette. And it's just so shit.
It's so
And then there's
shit.
A chair. She gets a chair out and she's like sitting on a chair. She has a body roll.
Uh-huh.
And this arm thing.
Oh, the snake arm. I lost the snake arm.
And then it ends with her going like stroking her hand by her face and like sitting back in that kind of pose that Derek has showed her with like a gangster lean.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So, yeah. Which okay, Sarah. I loved when I was younger.
Of course you did. So did I.
But it's like not a fucking Juilliard entrance level. Like she would never get in with that. And then it's so good that the bitchy mean man says, you're in.
I can't say this on the record, but
welcome
to Juilliard. Somebody pointed out in like the goofs section of IMDb, yeah. always a rich trove, that like there's like a thing that says like Juilliard entrance thing or whatever, and Juilliard is spelled wrong.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
That dance. It's like, so I had my 30th birthday a couple of years ago, and it was like a big kind of it's my birthday's like New Year's Eve, so it was like a big New Year's Eve party. I had loads of friends, uh-huh. and we went to this.
You're bringing the New Year's Eve?
It's the day before, so I always do that.
Same as my nephew.
Well,
there we go. Well,
you guys should meet.
What's his name?
He's 13.
His name is Jack.
Great. Anyway. I'll think of him on my next birthday.
The thing is, you will. That's stuck in your head now.
So it was my party and it was like, you know, 2 a.m. after New Year's. And I was like, we should put that song on. And my friend, Balia, who was like one of the probably only other black people at my party. I was like, we should do the Save the Last Dance dance. And she looked back at me and was like, we must. And we like, we didn't just do it in a casual way. We were like, everybody, we're doing a performance.
Oh my God.
And put it on and did, you know, we got the chair and we did all the stuff. Like, obviously not, I don't actually know the choreography, but the spirit of the dance.
Oh,
there.
Sure. Of course.
And it, but it was like an important, it was obviously hilarious, but it was like an important moment for us.
I'm sure it was.
And then afterwards we did, I mean, obviously we were pretty drunk, but we like interviewed each other. She interviewed me and she was like, when did you know you were going to make it into Juilliard?
Oh my God.
We did this whole thing.
This sounds like the best crack evening ever. I want to go back in time and befriend you so I can be get sent
but
to
we were there. Like not really joking. And then my boyfriend, after like a few days later, we were talking about it and he was like, there was actually something really like special about you and B or Balia doing that together. And he was like, only you two knew what the fuck you were on about.
Oh,
but like,
that's so
you
important.
Could see you two being like, we're doing this together. Like, this is us. Like, saying like, we're important and we're interviewing each other and you all need to shut the fuck up and watch us do this dance from our movie that we love.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is really sweet.
Yeah.
It sort of puts me in mind a bit of the dance at the end of Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion to Time After Time, if you're familiar with that at all.
No.
It's beautiful. Okay. It's like two very silly adult women doing a dance Time After Time. But it's like they're in their 30s, but it's like two little girls who've arranged a dance for an audience kind of thing. But it's very moving because you can just... see two women being on their own planet together.
Yes.
Nothing more moving.
It was like an act of love, I think. And everyone else was like, oh, what the fuck are you on about? I think the thing that's really, really changed for me over the time, like over the kind of however many views I've had, is just like, I hate Sarah Moore each time. And not like necessarily because of all the like hashtag problematic elements. She's just like a bit of a noob.
She
and I'm like,
is.
Oh, shut up. Stop showing off. Like, put your shoulders down. Just stop being so lame.
I know. I was a bit, when I watched the kind of the iconic balance beam scene, which is when she can first reveal, I was like, you didn't need to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're trying, if you're like, all going to be the person who's like not drawing attention to the fact that they did ballet because they feel very traumatized about it. Like, don't do that.
And literally like, people already think you're a bit stuck up because of the whole Capote thing.
Yeah.
So just like walk along the fucking beam like everybody else.
Why does she have friends?
This is the one thing I really, like I said, I just don't find it believable that anybody would like her.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Because she's shit.
I do find Julia Stiles, like, I mean, the thing, the character is very thinly written, but I feel like Julia Stiles brings her best to it. And I find her like, her just very sort of lovable in general.
Yeah.
Like I find like her performance just kind of gorgeous. I think as well, it's this thing that we don't really get in teen movies anymore, which is, like, I'm not saying that, like, this is kind of a very delicate thing to say, because Julie Stiles is a beautiful woman, but she also kind of looks like someone you could have grown up with.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
She's very, like, she's very everyday.
She kind of is, like, she's got that kind of big moon face.
Yeah.
And she's lovely, and she's, like, she brings, like, a real, like, softness to everything she does, I think. Like, which is why people love to say about you is that you have this bitchy character, but she clearly has a real thoughtfulness to her. Like, that's it, a thoughtfulness, I think.
Yeah.
And I think what's great about her performances, and especially in this movie, is that even when she's not speaking, you can kind of see her thinking.
Yes.
You can sort of see her eyes moving and taking things in and stuff. But you were saying that you watched this with your boyfriend last night and he tried to sort of make you see the problematic views and you were just like, no.
We watched it. Okay, so that same 30th birthday.
Yeah.
Really big Save the Last Dance moment for me, that. So we went away for like a couple of days after that. And we'd been together for like 6 months at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, we now watch Save the Last Dance because you've never seen this film. And mm-hmm. you have to know mm-hmm. this movie.
I'm that way about the film Michael Collins or My Boyfriend.
Oh, really?
It's a historical drama piece about an Irish freedom fighter. But he must watch it.
So we watched it together. And then, yeah, we were chatting this morning before I came here. And he was like, he said, isn't there also an element of this where... Sarah is basically going into a black neighborhood, appropriating their culture by, you know, taking their dance moves and then taking them to Juilliard so that she can get out of it. And I was mm-hmm. like, yeah, that's true. But like, meh. I think that with her, there's enough like being a slightly problematic white person thing
mm-hmm.
with her anyway, just being a bit like, oh, but there's one world and I love this black man and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
That we don't need to go on about, like, appropriation. I mean, maybe...
Yeah, no. But this is something we were talking about a little bit earlier on and it's kind of interested me. It's the thing of, like, the idea that discourse in general... This is kind of a wider point and not just about Save the Last Dance. I think discourse does go in cycles.
Mm.
Like, there's topics that we sort of obsess over for a while. And the example I kind of use is I remember 5 or 6 years ago... It became very a huge faux pas, definitely in online circles, to use the words mental or insane
yeah.
a lot. And the thing was that, like, you know, it was a part of a we need to talk about mental health kind of kick. And everyone was like, you don't be casual about language around mental health. And then everyone sort of like got it. Everyone did. Yeah. Everyone sort of did the reading.
Yes.
But then in the last few years, people are using those words more casually again. And I think that's because we've learned the lesson, but the wrapper that the lesson came yeah. in has kind of been discarded. And I think that's an interesting show of progress. And I think when we talk about, like, there's definitely been a trend in the last few years. And certainly when I was getting into digital media first and I was working at The Pool and you work at The Guardian, where identifying problems in films,
yes.
particularly films that maybe millennials grew up with,
mm-hmm.
became the real du jour. And, like, you know, how certain tropes are represented and that kind of thing. And it almost became like all film criticism became identifying problems.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
a Victorian explorer, just labelling things. Like, this is white
savior. Cultural appropriation.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Do you feel like we're growing out of that? Because if you're exhausted by it, and if I'm exhausted by it, that means everyone must be.
Oh, man, I really... I hope so. And I feel like trepidatious even like having the, do you know, like,
yeah.
I have heard, I think what tires me sometimes is like hearing the same phrase over and over again.
Mm.
So like an example that springs to my mind is we need people who look like us in positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, agree. But I just hear it so much from so many different people in so many different like worlds.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, yes. And like, I think people get like, it's like almost like a catchphrase that
yes.
gets stuck on people's lips. And it's like really like the point is true and great and really important. But like, I think there's like a certain number of times that you can hear it before it just becomes a like a blah.
I know exactly what you mean. I always feel the same way about the phrase gaslight.
Yeah.
You know? And like, this is, and people are going to argue with this, but you know, the word trauma as well, I'm starting to struggle with, because like, yes, post COVID, I think we're all traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. But the discomfort I experience, say, with getting on a flight is different to the discomfort a nurse might feel. Do you
yes,
know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
it's
totally.
And it, are we going to use the same word to describe both of our mental states? Like that's not, doesn't feel, so it's like we fall in, and you know, people are people. We just, we fall in love with phrases and terms and things
yeah,
that
yeah,
make
yeah,
things
yeah.
seem easier to us and more digestible. But then when we use these things as a cover for like real understanding,
yeah.
like I think like things we can just throw out there to sort
yes,
of signify.
That's it. It's almost like a placeholder for actually thinking often.
Yes,
it's
yes.
like, Sarah is doing cultural appropriation bad. And it's like, okay. Bye. And I feel like we're just like dissing my boyfriend. Yeah, Tom. Grow up.
Get a life, Tom. But I get why he said, but I understand. I don't know what your boyfriend, or your, sorry, your husband does for a living or anything, but I imagine he's like, okay, my online wife is going to another online woman's house to talk about online things.
Yeah.
Like, they're definitely going to want to talk about cultural appropriate. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
totally.
Of course, I would.
The online wife is tired. Online wife wants to just talk about Sarah's shoulders and how Malachi is scary, but also want to have sex with him.
A shred of compassion for online wife. Speaking of watching this film with men, I watched this with my boyfriend last night, and he said, save the last dance, more like saving all the dance to last. Because he's right, like, we don't really see her do that much until she...
Just a little Rhonda Jean attitude.
Yeah. The confusing thing about this movie as well is, and I realise this is movie magic, it's that, why are they doing it?
What, the practice?
Yeah,
because he's teaching her attitude. He's
but why? To what end?
For montages.
He rents a space.
Yeah. No. First of all, it's in the school.
Yeah,
because he has
in the
a key
cafeteria or something.
To the school.
Yeah.
Because yeah, and then he rents a space, or it's like a space that's going to be turned into something, and he knows about it for some reason. I think the idea behind that is like, she's a white lady with stiff shoulders and people are laughing at her, so he's going to teach her to, like, walk with a gangster lean.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Because people will love that.
Oh, that this, the first scene where they, like, practice Sarah's gangster attitude is probably one of my favourite scenes. Like, just when they're sitting on their chairs next to each other and doing the little, like, shoulder thing.
Oh,
I just think it's sweet.
But the thing is, the reason why it works, and like the logic of it only came to me at this time, but it never would have occurred to me as a young person, is because their chemistry is so truly gorgeous, and they just do seem like two young people who have found an excuse to hang out.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I don't really quite have the thing to ask you on a date, so I'm gonna use the framing of teaching you to dance. And that's very sweet. And they just are very, it's like, yeah, that's what holds any dance movie together, is like, do you want the two people to kiss?
Yes.
Because the dancing is a replacement for the kissing.
Yeah,
once they do kiss, it's kind of like the magic is gone a bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that the second, like, practice scene where they've moved from the school to the studio,
mm-hmm.
and she's got, like, little pigtails, and they're doing, it's, like, a bit more sexy, and she's, like, putting her ass in his crotch, and she says, like, how's my ass? And he goes, it's nice. I mean, it's good. I was like, ooh! The chemistry's good.
Didn't you say to me before we started recording that he was, like, crazy old?
So I was watching, I think it occurred to me in the gym scene, because they had, like, the gym scene is very school. You know when they have the, like, when, what's the other token white girl called?
The black hair?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Okay, well, she, the other white girl, which is another reason why Chenille wouldn't be friends with her. She's like, you've already got a white friend.
One.
She seems cool and Sarah's not.
She does seem cool.
And she's, like, going up the rope and she's like, use your upper body. She's like, I don't have an upper body. You know that bit. And there's all the, like, apparatus. And that made me think of, like, actual school. And then I looked at them all and was like, this is a really, really stupid example of, like, aging. So she was, you said she was 19.
Yeah.
So that's fine. What's her name? Kerry Washington was, like, 22.
Yeah. And Sean, somehow still looks younger now.
Yes. And Sean Patrick Thomas was 31.
31.
Playing 17. And he looks 31.
He does look 31. But I don't know why.
Malachi
doesn't...
looks about 70. He is not in school.
It's weird because it doesn't occur to me when I'm watching it, but then when I sort of, like, look at stills afterwards, I'm like, oh yeah, that man is old as hell. I can't believe we haven't talked about probably one of the worst makeover scenes in history. It's up there with The Breakfast Club in that,
it's
like,
from The Gap.
It's country, and you look country in it. And that was a real phrase that entered the girl lexicon, I think. You definitely did in my school.
Yeah.
People saying it's country and you look country in it. But, like, yeah, the tying her top around her head.
I mean,
it looks like a Halloween costume of, like, a fortune teller. And the big gold hoops with it. It's like one or the other, not both.
I think she's very industrious, Chenille. I was quite into the outfit.
Okay. And that's fine.
You're like, and we're done.
No, it just it did remind me of just like throwing together a fortune teller Halloween costume.
Yeah,
last
no, it's very fortune teller now you say that. But yeah, I really like how Sarah, like, she goes to Shanil and Derek's, doesn't she? To,
yeah.
Like, on the way. And she says there, like, I look okay, right? And Shanil's like, yeah. And then when they get to the club, Sarah's obviously, like, starting to panic more about her because she's seeing, like, other people arriving. And then she's like, hey, do I really look okay? And then Shanil's like, no. And then she does this makeover.
That's the most, like, believable their friendship gets, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no,
The bit in that scene I love as well, where it's one of the girls has a car.
Yeah.
And Shanil says, can I borrow your keys? I need to sit in your car for a minute.
Yes. She's like, what? She's like, just give me the keys.
It does feel like very teen. Like, it's obviously very like wish fulfillment-y of like all of these teenagers are able to sneak into this kind of over 21's club kind of thing. But it feels that right side of believable fantasy as opposed to this feels like a made up venue in a made up place and it would never exist and exist for the purposes of this film. It feels like, oh no, I could go to Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Or okay, when I was waiting for you to come over today, I read the script, the original script. But, you know, obviously they make lots of changes on the shot, and they did reshoots and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was quite, the original script was quite different. Steps was originally called Feets.
Feet.
Feets. Feets with a Z.
Oh my god.
Feets. What the fuck? And it was a real, so much more of it took place within the high school. It was a real, like a Grease almost of like...
Oh, interesting.
There was a lot of chat about prom and who was on the prom committee.
Oh, God, I love... There was not a single mention of prom in this film. Like,
no.
That's like so rare for a American high school
They probably
film.
Felt during those that kind of early noughties boom of teen movies that like, you have to mention prom.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how will we know?
The prom was kind of like main squeeze night at Steps.
I know, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
They were like, no, let's like make this... Let's like make school kind of incidental, really. There's very few scenes in the school when they actually went to shoot it. But let's make Chicago the place where these people are, you know, running around communicating with each other and having their lives, you know?
And
use the city really well.
Yeah, and that reflects, I guess, like the difference between the type of people who we're focusing on in this film and the type of people you focus on in like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
Or like, what's the one with Freddie Prinze Jr. in the... Ugly one who's not ugly and then she's all that.
Yeah, sorry.
That also goes along with the difference between the type of people we're focusing on in, say, The Last Dance versus high school films like She's All That or like 10 Things I Hate About You. It's like school isn't necessarily
the center of their world
of their world is like their family lives and stuff that's happening outside that's difficult, or like the club that they want to go to.
And it's so well observed, isn't it? Because like we see those high schools being the center of these kids' worlds in other films. Because first of all, they tend to be suburban kids who are like upper middle class, and they have these huge dreamy schools where there's like a drama program and all this. All it feels like there's endless bits of the school that go on forever.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because these would be suburban kids and you kind of want to distill them in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like you take a inner city school, these kids are all neighbors.
Yeah.
So there's much more of them just kind of hang around streets and that kind of stuff. And that just makes a lot more sense.
And like Malachi's not going to the prom.
He's not going to the prom!
Can you imagine?
There's a whole bit in the original script where Nikki is coming up to Derek and being like, you haven't bought your ticket for prom yet.
No.
I'm on the committee. I know. I was
She's
like,
Nikki's on the committee. Joking. No. Wrong.
That was Cheryl coming in with the rewrite, I think.
Yeah. Well, I just think there's so many places where it could have fallen and didn't. And I feel like black people in that writing room.
Yeah.
In a way that like, I feel if this was a film written by a more like classic of that time Hollywood teen film director, it would not have rung true.
Yeah.
At all.
It's also grittier than I remember it being. Like the kind of the violent scenes they feel very dangerous.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like play fighting at all.
What, when they shoot each other?
Like when they fucking shoot each other.
Yeah. No, it's scary. It's really, really scary.
Yeah.
And I really, really love the kind of Derek being trapped between the two worlds thing. I think that's a really under told story, especially at that time, which is like, Derek is really, really smart.
Mm.
Derek wants to be a doctor, a pediatrician, because he likes kids. Well, that was a shit line.
I was like, yeah, give him some motivation, please. Yeah.
I like kids. But he's friends.
I like kids.
It's just to make, like, women in the audience go, ooh, like kids.
Yeah, and like, so say something about how your sister can't get healthcare for a job. Yeah. Maybe that'll be too on the nose. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Classic white person trying to do that.
Yeah.
Get her out of the writing room.
Get her out of here.
But yeah, so he wants to go to Georgetown. He's got a vision for his future, which isn't just, you know, staying where he is and kind of hanging with the pros. You know what I mean? And then he's got loyalties and friendships with people who don't have those opportunities, and he really understands that, and he's conflicted by it. And I think it's just so well told, because he doesn't look down on his friends who are, like, involved in drug dealing and violence, because he knows why they're doing it, because he easily could have been doing it and was doing it for a while.
Yeah.
But, and they, everybody finds it really difficult. Derek finds it really difficult, because he's trapped between the two. Sarah finds it difficult to understand why she hangs around with Malachi, because she's like, he's scary. He's like a scary bad man.
And he hit me.
Yeah. Fair point. And Malachi doesn't feel that Derek is being loyal, because Derek is going to go off to Georgetown, and he's now got a white girlfriend. And Malachi has, like, saved Derek's ass in the past.
Yeah.
And it's really complicated, and they don't give an answer to it. They just kind of put it out there, and it's like, this is what it would be like. It's hard, and nobody is fine with it, and nobody knows quite what to do with it.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing that they throw out all this thing about, like, and you totally do see it from the perspective of those characters, of being like, oh, you're like, kind of, you're so upwardly mobile out of this neighborhood, and you're gonna go to medical school, and now you have sort of your white girlfriend to complete the package.
Yeah.
Like, of course you would think that kind of thing.
And you're not gonna come with me while I go and, like, find these guys who tried to kill me, because you're too good now. But, like, I don't... He says something like, I'm not going to go to Georgetown. All I have is my respect.
Yeah.
And, like, can't argue with that.
You can't argue with that. But that's like, I feel for every character in this. Even Chenille's, like, boyfriend, or Chenille's ex-boyfriend, who's the father of Christopher...
Yeah.
I really feel for that guy. I think he is kind of trying his best but failing. I think he is sort of, like, bamboozled by fatherhood. And he tries to show up for his kid, and his kid doesn't recognize. Like, it's kind of, obviously, it's quite stereotypical. Like, we've seen those scenes like that before. But just the performance, you can see the character thinking. You can see him struggling. And I just, like, I want the best for everyone.
I do too. You know? I wish Malachi well. I wish Derek
when he gets out of prison.
But I think it's really, really smart, and I like her not getting it.
Yeah.
I really like that they show every part of that, and she and her kind of very unnuanced understanding of it, which is like, it's bad to do crime. You shouldn't be with those guys.
I stole a hat once.
Oh my God.
I love that.
My mum
line.
Made me take it back. It's like, really could have just not told that story, babe.
I kind of went adorable. It's like she knows how stupid she's being.
Yeah, it's just so sweet. He's like, we robbed a liquor store, and, like, held him up at gunpoint. And she's like, I saw the hat, then I gave it back.
I also, what I love about their hangout scenes is how they're dressed.
Yeah.
Like, you can feel how cold it is. Like, she's in this huge fucking puffer jacket and these huge, like, trousers as well. Like, and, like, little woolly hat kind of thing.
And her JanSport backpack.
There's something really lovely, especially when you're so used to seeing teen movies set in, like, California, where everyone's people look cold all the time. And I sort of love that. I grew up in Ireland, obviously, so I was cold all the time.
Yeah.
I get it. It's nice to see.
It is.
Nice to see people like me on screen.
Representation on screen, we need more of it.
Cold white teenager.
I really love, we haven't really talked about the dad at all.
Oh, Roy, yeah.
Jazzy Janky Roy. I feel really sorry for him, and I think obviously, like, shit dad, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But I love him, and I actually would have had maybe more Roy. I like his, like, he's not that similar to my dad at all, but there's something, like, his apartment looks like my dad's flat in Liverpool. My dad is, like, an arty, musician-y guy who's, like, just, well, but not, like, kind of like Roy, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of like the life of, like, a working artist. And he's just kind of, like, he's just been in his little life for 17 years doing his stuff and eating his Hungry Man dinners, and then this like snooty bitch of a daughter walks in and he just doesn't know what to do with it. And and he like wants her to go to his gig and she's like, it's a school night, right? And I find him very sweet.
I know, I find that whole dynamic, I think it's really well played.
It's like, really well played. He's so like, believable.
Because the thing, you want to side with him and you're rooting for him, but you're like, you didn't get the house ready, Roy.
I know.
Why
fix
isn't
the
door.
House ready?
Fix the fucking fix the door. Fucking, when he reveals the bedroom to her.
Oh, man. You know what? It's so cheesy, but I actually, I well up. I do well
I
up.
I do? I well up too!
Because it's like, okay, it's like a real like narrative device, blah, blah, blah. But it really works. It's like, you're settling here now. I'm your father. I care for you. And this is like, this is actually your life, and I'm investing in that. And I've heard what you care about, and I've been witnessing you being here, and I've thought about what you would need in your room, and I'm putting it in there. It's just nice.
Just like the standards for on-screen dads versus the standards for on-screen dads is so night and day. Like, the mom gives up her whole life to just drive around to ballet shit all the time.
Dies because of it.
Yeah. And we're like, yeah, she probably smothered her. Dad makes bedroom for child. Oh my god,
he's so adorable. Yeah, that's very true.
This dad's being a bit nice. Oh. Yeah, I love Roy though.
Me too.
I bet you any money on the cutting room floor there's a scene of her seeing Roy do jazz. That they were like, because like, why have all that set dressing around him doing jazz? There's definitely a scene where she went to go see him play.
Do you think? I just, for me, the like Roy doing jazz just makes so much sense. I'm like, yeah, that's Roy the jazz dad. It's just like, he would be the guy that her mom had like, you know, thought was the guy, but then she started having a successful cake business and he was like working on his art in the loft and like not contributing, and then the cake business started taking off, and then Roy got a bit depressed and like couldn't make his masterpiece, and she was just like, fuck this.
Yeah,
he moves to Chicago, makes lots of, I don't know, he just I get it.
Totally believe it. I totally get it. It also makes sense that like you would go, I mean this is very much a deleted scene in my head, that you would go from like probably spending years nurturing this musician man and trying to get his dreams going, ultimately giving up on it, and then putting all the energy into nurturing your daughter's dreams instead. Like, she's a real nurturer.
Yeah, she is.
That poor dead woman. One scene that made my boyfriend was like barely paying attention. He was like on his laptop while I was watching it, and he looked up and went, "What the fuck?" When Derek says to Sarah, "What, are you gonna punk out in this? Like you punked out in ballet when your mom died?"
Yes. It's like, whoa. Get over it, Sarah.
It's been 3 months, Sarah.
She also doesn't seem that sad, Sarah.
No.
I'm like, I don't know. She just seems like...
She's quite glacial.
She's moody.
She's moody.
Maybe that's just grief. Take that out. Okay. I'm not going to judge the grieving process.
But I like as well that, like, you know, Sarah has been through this terrible thing. Mm. And she's like, oh, no one bring it up except everyone bring it up, please. But it's also like, she's not the only person with horrible stuff in their life.
Yeah.
Like the Chenille and Derek, their mother is in and out of jail or whatever. Yeah. It's like, they're very like, it's not this thing where she reveals her tragic backstory and everyone's like, oh, we never knew, Sarah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us nurture you some more.
Yeah.
They're a bit like, the kind of the tone is, yeah, well, fucked up things happen to everybody.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And that scene where, I don't know if it's intentional, but it's unclear in that scene whether Derek already knew her mom was dead when he keeps asking her about her mom, like, you all tight and shit. And she's like, she's dead, all right. What do you want me to
say? She's dead!
And she goes, do you want me to fucking shout about it? And he's like, yeah, if you want to. But it's just like, he's not like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. Oh my God, are you okay? Like, he's just
he's like, yeah, lots of people have dead parents.
Yeah, but he's also like, so talk about it. Like, tell me about it. Let's talk about the ballet. Let's talk about your mom. And she's like, no. And then she goes to the ballet and she likes it. And then she starts
dancing.
She
loves it.
She fucking loves it.
The thing about those ballet scenes in the movie, the one where they're actually watching ballet, and they're gorgeous, they're so lovely to watch, but it doesn't highlight how much her
that's
skill
ballet,
is lacking.
I'm
like, that's ballet.
And she knows it. Maybe that's why she's crying. She's like,
I just, I just don't think her ballet is very good.
It's not very good, but like to get somebody that good, they'd have had to cast like a prima ballerina
yeah.
who probably isn't as yeah. good at acting and doesn't want to be in the film. But it is funny to hate on her shoulders.
Yeah, it is funny. I also think that like there's a profound lack of vanity with Julia Stiles' performance where she is doing her first appearance in Steps. It is so fucking embarrassing. Yeah. It's so bad. Like, you'd really want to be a committed actress to be like, yeah, I'm going to look awful doing this. It's going to look so awkward. Yeah. I was like, that's real. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. She's really cringe as a character and she really leans into that. And
yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
My only other quote was Roy saying, it's not much what you're used to, but the world is hot and the mice are friendly. She's like...
Okay. Okay. My mom's dead. Okay. Okay, my mom's dead. All right, Leah, thank you so much for coming here today. Is there anything you'd like to tell everyone about? Or you're a producer, you produce podcasts like this and better than this?
I produce Comfort Eating with Grace Dent, mm-hmm. The Guardian.
Do you prefer me or her? You can be honest.
No, I can't.
There is no right answer.
Kick you
to
out
that
of my
question.
Home.
Yeah, but that's a wonderful podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, I do that and video stuff on The Guardian.
Cool. We'll all look out for it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad that we got to talk about this
Me
movie.
Too. It's been the best day of my life.
Country, and you look country in it.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.